It's a wake-up call in more ways than one. Time for some you need to know.
I was eager to share this with you because the Washington Post had some exclusive reporting yesterday. Iranian airstrikes have damaged or destroyed at least 228 structures or pieces of equipment at U.S. military strikes across the Middle East since the war began. That includes hangars, barracks, fuel depots, aircraft, radar communications, and defense equipment. That, according to a Washington Post analysis of satellite imagery. Now, that is more than we're being told, and it is a number that is much higher than you're hearing from Pete Hegseth. The amount of destruction is far larger. The threat of air attacks rendered some of the U.S. bases in the region too dangerous to staff at normal levels. Commanders moved most of the personnel from these sites out of range of Iranian fire at the start of the war. Since the start, on February 28th, seven service members have died in strikes on U.S. facilities in the region, and more than 400 troops have suffered injuries as of late April. Most of the wounded have returned to duty within days. At least 12 suffered injuries that medical officials classified as serious, that according to U.S. officials, who, among others in this reporting, had to speak on condition of anonymity. So it's been difficult to get satellite imagery out of the Middle East for us. Because that's according to all the experts, the Iranian state news agencies. So from the start of the war, though, regularly published high-resolution satellite imagery has been published by the Iranians. And it shows things that are not great. So the Post reviewed these, Jamie, and what did they find?
Well, they said that the damage at the site suggested that the U.S. military had underestimated Iran's targeting abilities, not adapted sufficiently to modern drone warfare, and left some bases underprotected. Which, if you're watching this from afar or you're keeping track of what's been happening there, this seems even worse than we've even been told or we understand. And clearly, it might be. I mean, here's the thing, too. Information that that damage might be greater. This is just another step in the erosion of public trust in what we're actually being told. Right. And when we are talking about real troops and real people, real injuries, real consequences, I mean, this president is already underwater as far as what the American people think about this war on all sides, Democrats, Republicans, and independents. And so then when we start hearing this, how does this make people feel? I mean, if you voted for this administration and you start hearing this and you start hearing that the casualties of infrastructure, potentially people, could be worse, and you didn't want a war, and you voted for this president because he kept telling us that Kamala Harris was going to get you into this war, and now it's his administration who has. How does that make you feel at the end of the day? I mean, that's a legitimate question I do have for voters.
855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. How does this make you feel? Because now this is why the Washington Post just won a Pulitzer for their coverage of the war, because they're doing things like this. And this is what journalism is supposed to do. So the reporters are going through these images. They found 10 damaged or destroyed structures that were not documented in the imagery released by Iran. So the Post found 217 structures and 11 pieces of equipment that were damaged or destroyed at 15 U.S. military sites in the region that they did not tell us about. You know, we haven't heard... Right? All we're hearing is how great things are going. All we're hearing is that we're winning. It's over. We're bombing them back to the Stone Age. We're doing all this and minimizing, even when those service members were killed, those U.S. service members, they downplayed it. They gave the normal hand-wringing and thoughts and prayers to their families, but basically said, this is what they sign up for, and they know the risks. And while that is true, you owe it to their memories, and you owe it to their families, and you owe it to us to give us accurate information. We can take it. The problem is we can take it, but the president cannot. He does not want any information coming out that says we are not doing anything other than stellar, that we are an unstoppable force, that our enemies cannot hurt us at all. Well, guess what? We've all watched, since Vietnam, we've all watched wars on TV. We watched the first invasion of Iraq on TV. We understand the cost of war, but what we don't understand is why you lie to us about it. Because if you think in this day and age, there's always receipts, and those receipts are going to come out. And if you think you can hide from them, the only word I have for you is stupid. Because you are stupid if you think we're not going to find out. Somebody's always looking. And you can call it a witch hunt. I call it monitoring the government and keeping tabs on the people who are supposed to be leading this country.
And I think if you're this administration, who is obviously very concerned about what's to come in November, right? We've talked about that this week.
And their image.
Public opinion, it doesn't just follow these stories, to your point, Brian. It essentially shapes it. It's going to influence their decisions coming over the next few months. It is going to affect funding, not only for things, for all things, right? I mean, this administration wants $1 trillion to fund the military in this country. And it also, I think this is the big one, which is why people were so concerned about any conflict in the Middle East. How long is the United States going to be involved in this? So when all of this information and all of these new pieces start coming at people, it really is an understanding here at home of what's happening. And it doesn't become just another headline. It becomes, right, I think, more personal for people, especially as we're talking about the infrastructure and we're talking about service members. And that is going to reflect what happens over the next few months. And for me, I guess watching this, I guess this is also what makes this GOP a little bit more dangerous going forward. If they understand this perception and this is how things are going to shift because of what we're hearing about Iran and the economy, what lengths do they go to make sure that the election process is harder for everybody?
It's the entire thing is wrapped up around power and money. And also Donald Trump's fragile ego. This is not the first time we've had a president during wartime who has not served. This is the first time we have someone who actively sought deferments to get out of a war. There's a crucial difference. Because when you have a president who may not have served in the military, back to something you said earlier, and we've said it many times, they have the smarts to surround themselves with not only a Secretary of Defense who knows what they're doing, which we do not have. They also don't fire top generals, top military officials. They listen. This is what makes the smartest guy in the room isn't the guy who knows everything. The smartest guy in the room is smart enough to know what he doesn't know. And when you don't know something, the true sign of ignorance is to act like you do and go ahead with things. The true sign of intelligence is saying, I know a lot. But what I don't know, this guy specializes in, or this woman specializes in. And I'm going to listen to them because, one, then I'm going to look smarter because now I have the answers. And I've surrounded myself with people. And now it's a team that is making this decision. And you know we've consulted on it. We don't have that. We have a guy who operates from his gut feelings and cannot keep any decision, he backs out of everything. It's waver, it's capitulate, and we have a Secretary of Defense who is, in my opinion, useless, a cosplayer. He loves to talk the talk. He would not send his children into this conflict. He would not send himself into this conflict, but he's more than willing to send your kids into this conflict. With no guarantee, there's never a guarantee when you go to war, but at least you have a reason. At least you have some sort of blueprint. It's not there. It's just not. And it's getting worse and worse. And this kind of evidence that now they're outright lying to us about how much damage. it's par for the course, but that doesn't mean we have to accept it.
The sad part is I'm not surprised. And you're right, we shouldn't accept it.
I'm not surprised either.
But I'm not surprised, just based on what we've seen over the last couple of months. In other headlines for stuff you need to know this morning, because it just gets better and better. A suicide note purportedly left behind in his jail cell by the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein before his first attempt to kill himself said, quote, "It is a treat to be able to choose one's time to say goodbye." Now, Epstein's former cellmate, who is a convicted quadruple murderer, claimed that he found this note tucked into a book just a few days after Epstein's first suicide attempt, which was back in July of 2019. At the time, Epstein denied being suicidal and told a psychologist, "I have no interest in killing myself." Well, a federal judge ordered that note unsealed yesterday, giving the public and investigators their first look at this purported suicide note. It's a cryptic, one-page, handwritten note, and it offered a few new details about Epstein's motivations, or at least what we assume are motivations, and there is no confirmation that Epstein himself actually authored this. Mm-hmm. Now, the note says, quote, "They investigated me for a month, found nothing. What you want me to do? Burst out crying?" The note continued, all in caps, "No fun, not worth it." One line in the seven-line note is unclear because one word is indecipherable. Now, Epstein, as a lot of us know, died in jail while awaiting trial on August 10th of 2019. His death was ruled a suicide by hanging by the New York Medical Examiner's Office, and the Justice Department concurred with that finding. And again, we'll remind everybody, though, that Justice Department at the time was under Donald Trump's jurisdiction, led by Bill Barr at the time. Of mm-hmm. Jeffrey Epstein's alleged suicide. So,
alleged.
What we're assuming is alleged. What we've been told is alleged. So, or it was a suicide. So we're going to say it was a suicide. But I know there's been a lot of mystery and a lot of people questioning this particular death.
And a lot of, let's say it together, kids, coincidences. Coincidences, the camera went out. The guards were both looking at a motorcycle magazine shopping for motorcycles. Now an alleged note by a four-time murderer that was found in a book. It's, boy, oh boy, that's a lot of coincidences again.
Yeah.
A lot of, and if you keep following the chain, you go, wow, That's a lot of coincidences. He killed himself. He's an alleged sex trafficker, pedophile. Okay, well, are we any worse off? No, but the company he kept,
yes.
Do you put it past all these alleged powerful people who are named in this list, like the president, to maybe not want the guy who ran the whole thing to have leverage over them?
Or to actually speak under trial, under oath?
Well, I mean, you know. Sure. That's,
but it goes,
again.
Goes back to the same conversation. No clarity, no consistency, no confidence in the process.